Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us. Hawaii Talks on The Conversation. It's Friday, December 6th. We have an AI Hana Ho show for you today, where we're airing stories about the inroads that machine learning has made in our daily lives. On the garden aisle, one paper pushed the AI envelope and had people doing a double take. The Hawaii Media Council weighs in on using it to present the news headlines. A local tech expert shares his perspectives on the pros and cons of artificial intelligence in business. We hear from University of Hawaii at Hilo professor Patrick Hart about using new tech deep in the forest. And with artificial intelligence reaching into just about every area of our lives, we'll hear from a Hawaii-born tech entrepreneur who has created an app using AI as a sidekick guardian just for kids. Listening to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Or am I? Would you be able to tell if I were a real person or a fake voice created by artificial intelligence? Well, followers of legacy Kauai newspaper The Garden Isle were recently introduced to Rose and James, the paper's newest hires. Take a listen to this clip from their show called TGI Today.
Welcome to TGI Today, Kauai Island's only live newscast powered by AI. TGI Today focuses on local and relevant news content you can only get from the Garden Island. I'm James, and with me is Rose. Join us as we bring you the in-depth stories behind the headlines right here on TGI Today. On today's show, we'll cover stories about sign waivers bringing attention to suicide prevention, The Point and Hilton Grand Vacations helping build homes in Waimea, and the soaring home sales in July. Before we start, a big mahalo to Long's Drugs for sponsoring today's newscast. Visit your local Long's Drugs for your everyday needs and continue to make Long's part of your day.
We reached out to Long's Drugs, who said it was unaware of the logo being used in the AI-generated TGI Today video. Long's has a sponsorship agreement in place with the Garden Island's owner, Oahu Publications, Inc. The Conversation's Maddie Bender wanted to better understand how these AI newscasters were created and the use of bots around the world. She spoke with technology journalist Matthew Gout, who wrote a story for the website 404 Media about these AI newscasters, and Kalido, the Israeli company that created them.
They look pasty to me. Their skin kind of looks sallow, and their mannerisms don't track as human. They look like animated GIFs, where they're kind of repeating the same motions and facial expressions over and over again. It's funny, one of the commenters, I think on YouTube, every single time one of these comes out, goes below the video and points out that James makes the same motion with his hands repeatedly, and that it's very distracting. And then once you see that, you can't unsee it. That's all you're looking at. It's just James' hands kind of coming apart and coming back together. It almost looks like they're on a repeated loop.
If we can't know for sure how this specific case, these avatars are being created, do you have any insight as to what that process usually looks like?
I mean, it's a lot like making an avatar for a video game. So the way these avatars are typically created is through a process called using a generative adversarial network, which is kind of like how large language models and image generation works, where there's a large database of pictures of humans and a computer kind of slaps all this stuff together and creates what I would call is like an amalgamation of all of those different people.
What, if anything, makes this notable?
Well, there aren't very many of these, actually. So that's one of the things that stands out. You know, we've got, there's what's happening in Beijing. There is a company called Channel One, which, as far as I know, is still kind of in its beta phase. And its pitch is that it's going to create a personalized news broadcast for an individual or a company based on their needs. And then Russia Today is doing something like this in Latin America, where they're using AI broadcasters. So it's notable because it's the first time that I've seen it in the U.S. And it's also, it's a small local paper. This is not as if ABC suddenly premiered an AI avatar, right? This is a company and a paper that normally would not have any kind of news broadcaster at all. And it's what they're doing really is just kind of reading ChatGPT summaries of what the four journalists have fed into the machine. I don't know who this is for, you know? Like, I think if you're someone that's already reading the paper and you're getting the Garden Island, I can't imagine that you also then want to watch a 20-minute YouTube video of someone reading that stuff to you. It's strange. And for people that haven't watched it, it is very cheap looking and cheap sounding. The voices are, you know, one of the great things about broadcasters is that there's a voice that kind of soothes you and draws you in, and you build up a parasocial relationship with them. You're not going to build up a parasocial relationship with James or Rose. They don't sound or look human. There's an uncanny valley effect that's going to keep you at a distance from them. And the information you're getting from them is not enough, and it's more efficiently consumed in other ways.
Did you happen to look into any of the content that the two avatars are saying? Your impression is that it's like ChatGPT or AI chatbot summaries of Garden Island articles, but I'm wondering about like hallucination or whether there could be anything factually that the content is getting wrong.
So that's one of my big concerns. And this is one of the questions that I, in the several attempts to try to talk to Kalido and TGI and OPI, that was my number one question is like, how do you know that this thing's not hallucinating? What are the guardrails, et cetera? So just based on the outputs, like what they're saying and the stories that I have seen on the website, Kalido has some sort of proprietary LLM that is similar to ChatGPT that is generating the script based on what is being written in those articles. A lot of the stuff is word for word. It does miss things, though. I didn't see anything that was egregiously, like, completely incorrect. But, like, one of the big stories was about a local church that does a Labor Day lunch and has done it for the past 43 years. It's a big tradition. It left some of the information out about one of the women that they were talking about, who she's like an important figure in the church and sits on this veterans board and is involved in a VA hospital. And like, they just kind of characterize her as someone who was there. And this is what she said about it. And it's like, that's not a hallucination, but it's just kind of, it's something that an LLM doesn't understand the nuance and the context of who this person is when they're repeating the story, right?
Yeah. And it's making it more generic than it could have been.
Exactly. It's kind of, it's stripping, like all of this, it's stripping the humanity out of everything. This probably would not exist if it were not cheap and easy to produce, right? Because making a daily news show is hard. It's hard. You know this. You live it every day. It's a lot of work. It's labor. And I think that's like overall, that's one of the big pieces of the AI story is it's not going to go away because it is too tantalizing for companies to reduce their bottom line by cutting out as much labor as possible and replacing it with automated systems. I think that they will find that it is far less profitable than they were expecting and that the costs of these systems are going to be shocking when everything is said and done. But we're going to have to go through the corporations trying to make this work for a while before it kind of falls apart. And unfortunately, more people are going to lose their jobs. More journalists are going to lose their jobs. And there's going to be more stuff like this. There's going to be more Roses and Jameses out there.
Are there any questions that you still have?
Oh, I have so many. Something we talked about earlier, we didn't really dive into, is like, how is this fact checked? Kalido's website claims that there's a human overseeing the entire process. How does that work? What does it look like? What did this thing cost? What does it cost? And what could that money have been spent on in that newsroom instead of this? I think my last parting shot would be that like, I do read I follow news about conflict a lot, and the Pacific is a very important part of that beat, and that there's a lot of amazing coverage that is happening, that is being done every day by real journalists who are flesh and blood and alive, and that the publications under OPI are producing wonderful work, and that it's disappointing to see them also make this decision.
That was tech journalist Matthew Galt talking with HPR's Maddie Bender. At the time, the Star Advertiser Union told us, "We think there's a place for AI in the newsroom, but that this feels like a step backward in maintaining trust. We think it's unlikely the community will embrace James or Rose as Kama'aina." Well, Oahu Publications confirmed to Wired that TGI Today was discontinued last month. We originally aired this story back in September, and we're sharing it again as part of our AI Hanaho show. Stay tuned. We'll return to this story after a break.
Support for HPR comes from Nohea Gallery at Kahala Mall, with gift ideas from Hawaii's artists, including handcrafted jewelry, local woodwork, original art, and custom prints. NoheaGallery.com.
This moment matters. If you rely on HPR's carefully researched news and thoughtfully curated music, now's the time to support it. Your donation helps HPR serve the people of Hawaii and foster an informed, resilient community. As the end of the year approaches, consider a tax-deductible gift to HPR. $10 a month is a great place to start. Donate today at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for HPR comes from Leeward Theater's Kala'e, Kalena, Kalikimaka, an evening of music, hula, and holiday cheer December 13th. Tickets at leeward.hawaii.edu/leewardtheater.
We return now to our story about the Garden Islands' use of artificial intelligence newscasters. Gerald Kato was a real-life newscaster. He's also a retired University of Hawaii at Manoa journalism professor and a member of the Media Council Hawaii. He came into our studio to give us another perspective on AI in journalism.
What is AI? It's not real. It's artificial. And, you know, we who have been journalists work in an environment, we deal with reality. Real journalists deal with reality, truth. And, you know, there's reason for a lot of us to be concerned about artificial intelligence anchors, artificial intelligence voices, artificial intelligence combined with the deep fakes. They're not true. And that runs contrary to everything we believe as journalists. So it's something of some concern. Now, having said that, you know, I recognize that artificial intelligence can be a very useful tool for journalists, especially in a more mundane task of putting together routine stories, statistics, and things of that nature. But in terms of presenting the news, writing the news, reporting the news, I think that needs real intelligence, not artificial one. I think there's reason to be concerned about this move into artificial intelligence on the Garden Island.
As an example, you know, I was out covering the rally at the Hilton Hawaiian Village where ILWU was out there supporting Local 5. And it's one thing, you know, if you were to write up a story based on the press releases that are generated over this, but to actually be there on the hotel premises and watch the interaction of the visitors that are there at the hotel and watching this play out, you just pick up these nuances that you won't get from a AI story.
Sure, that's why real journalists are so important. You need people on the ground who can do the analysis, who can be your eyes and ears of the public who's not there. If it's just a matter of picking up a news release from somebody, anybody could do that. You feed it into a computer and, okay, it spits out a story. But I think this community, news consumers generally, deserve a lot better. And that's why I think we should give some pause to using artificial intelligence. We should all start to think about how we use it in the news. As I said, there may be a place for artificial intelligence as a tool, not as a replacement for journalists reporting. It's a cheap way to put out the news.
So how should newsrooms be preparing for this if they haven't already?
Well, I think newsrooms need to start engaging in a conversation first with their staff about how and when use of artificial intelligence would be appropriate and how the company, the institution, intends to use AI as a tool so that everybody's clear on what the ethics will be. You don't want to have a situation in which AI is producing the news and AI ultimately determines what your ethics for using AI becomes. And that's a real thing. You know, you can go to an AI product and ask it, what's the ethics of this? And they'll crank out something for you. You don't want to be in that situation. I think real people need to engage in real conversations about what and how we use AI and what kind of bright lines we're going to draw, because it's important for us as journalists and news people to retain our credibility so that people don't start thinking, well, you know, I wonder if that's true. I wonder if that person I'm seeing on the broadcast station, is that a real person?
Or not.
Or not. Or is the voice I'm hearing, is that a real voice? Or is something generated by some machine?
So we should be talking about policies to help guide us, because this is coming pretty fast. I mean, I went to a conference a year ago, and as an example, we were using ChatGPT to generate stories, and I put out there Lahaina wildfires. And to see the story that they were generating, I was aghast. They had people in down jackets, you know, in houses. And you're like, wait a minute, this is not Hawaii. And so, yeah, it's a little scary, but it is moving at a very intense rate. Yeah.
And that's why I say, you know, we need to engage in conversation now, because it's evolving so quickly. You know, the advent of the Kauai avatar is still rather crude presentation. But I had mentioned to you earlier, I had been in China a couple of years ago. And just when China was about to unveil its first AI anchor, and it was good. I mean, you know, it was pretty good presentation.
Polished.
Very polished. And that was a couple of years ago. They've been working on this to the point where they can use a real anchor, use his features, his face, and make it seem like it's really him or her on the air. And so, you know, why do we need a human being? This avatar can be on 24 hours a day, and he's our anchor. And we don't have to pay him 24 hours a day.
Yeah. So sadly, though, this is moving at a very fast clip, and we need to be ready to have these difficult conversations.
You need to be ready and have that difficult conversation about journalism ethics, about how you deal with it on a labor situation. I mean, intellectual property. Can somebody just come along and say, well, you know, the company just say, well, Catherine, we're going to put your voice in a computer and we don't really need you to voice this story. We've got it on AI. You probably would object to that, as many others would, because your voice, your knowledge of the community, they're all part of your intellectual property. So these are issues, serious issues that need discussion. You can't just ignore it and hope it'll go away, because, you know, it'll get worse over time and erode journalistic credibility here and wherever it's in, put to use. So you need to begin the conversation about how, when, where, immediately.
I used to like to say, I want to use technology more than it uses me. I think we're probably at a juncture where it could really go the other way.
We sure are. We don't want technology to be dictating to us how we do things, why we do things, and the ethics. I wouldn't want a machine defining for me what the public interest is in terms of news and information.
Okay, so people just need to be on guard and be discerning about whatever they're listening to and watching and reading, for that matter.
They sure do. And in this day and age, you need to be very aware of where your news and information is coming from and the credibility. News literacy is something that I fully endorse.
And that was Gerald Kato of the Hawaii Media Council. And we did reach out to get the views of another veteran journalist. Jan Ten Bruggenkate is the former Kauai bureau chief for the Honolulu Advertiser, who still lives on the Garden Isle. He lamented that back in the day, there would be at least four journalists covering the county council meetings, and says today, you would be lucky to have one reporter in the room. He wishes more resources were directed in the news gathering. Artificial intelligence, AI. It is the technology behind the facial recognition that unlocks your phone and what personalizes what you see on social media. As it becomes more prevalent in the workforce, many Hawaii businesses have started to ask, how can AI be helpful or harmful? Ian Kitajima is the president of the Pacific International Center for High Technology Research. He has more than 30 years of experience in the innovation and development of advanced technologies. He sat down with HPR's Russell Subiono.
It's already in your pocket if you're carrying a phone, right? It's if you have any of those Alexa devices, I have tons of them in my home when I'm talking to Alexa. It's actually all around us. Maybe you don't see it, but it's already there. Mm-hmm. But I think what has happened more recently in the last few months is because of these, they call it large language models like ChatGPT, all of a sudden the everyday person came in like, direct contact to it. And it's literally like magic. It's like having like a little genie on your shoulder, or it's like having the smartest person in the room as your friend. A friend of mine just said, phone a friend, right? So if you had a topic or you wanted to like have it write, like I'm going to do a presentation. Can you write me an outline about a particular subject? Or I'm planning a party, a birthday party for, you know, a three-year-old. What are some recommendations? Right. All of a sudden, it seems very human-like. And I think that's what's exciting and also what's also scaring people. So I think many of the things that we may think today are science fiction are going to probably be a reality maybe sooner than we expect. You know, I was just telling somebody, remember the Dick Tracy watch idea?
Right.
That came from like, I think that was like in the 60s or something.
Right.
Right?
Well, you could talk into your watch. Right?
Well, yeah. Guess what? 50 years later, right. We can talk into our watches.
Right.
Right, we can do all of these crazy things. So you can imagine in 50 years, what is going to be possible.
How important do you think it is that people educate themselves on AI?
Oh, I think it's super important. You know, I think the reality of what's going to happen is you're going to be competing with people who are already using artificial intelligence as part of their work. So it's going to be those who are using it versus those who are not. And if I'm using it, I may be 5 times maybe more productive than you are. So you don't have to use it, but you're going to be competing against people and organizations and companies that are. And I want to say that I'm super excited about AI because I remember being around when the internet first kind of came to public consciousness back in 1995. I remember looking at a screen that one of my software guys were looking at and I asked him, what are you looking at? And he goes, well, this is like a browser. And it's like, a browser? What is a browser? And what are you looking at? He goes, well, this is called the World Wide Web, the internet. And I go, well, what is the internet? What is the World Wide Web? And what is the thing you're looking at? And he said, oh, this is a website called Yahoo. And the same questions we were asking ourselves back then, which is, what is the internet and what do you do with it, is the same questions we're asking about artificial intelligence. And I think it's another huge, huge opportunity for us in Hawaii and for our young people to be the creators of the future. This is a superpower. This is like a super skill that if we can become educated and be the masters of it versus be afraid of it, I think there is so much opportunity for us in Hawaii.
And so when we look at different areas in our life where it can be applied, I know you're giving a talk about using AI in business. Let's talk a little bit about how AI can impact business. What's one of the big ways that AI can have a positive influence?
Yeah, so at this Hawaii Society of Business Professionals gathering we're going to be doing on September 21st, so one of the simplest things I think you can use AI for is to summarize. So I use some tools where it transcribes my entire meeting. Say you had 10 people on a Zoom call or a Google Meet call, 10 people for 1 hour, and you have to summarize that meeting. It's impossible. It's so much work. But I can use this system that transcribes all of it into text, and then I can hit one button and it summarizes the entire meeting so succinctly. I could never, ever make a better summary than what the AI will do. And that by itself saves a tremendous amount of time. And a lot of times, you know, like you may have to read like a long article, right? Say, oh, I got this 10-page article, but I got like 5 of them to read. Well, guess what? I can have ChatGPT or one of these other systems summarize like a 50-page document, and it'll do it in like 60 seconds.
If you're a business, and as we know for businesses, time is money, yep, right? If AI can help you save time on a lot of menial tasks, that's worth it, right, a business?
Yeah, totally worth it. I mean, you're right. I mean, I think some people are saying, you know, AI is kind of like a time machine. It can save you a tremendous amount of time to do many things. And, you know, if you're writing, like, you have to write proposals, for example, I think what's going to happen, and it's going to happen very quickly, especially for companies where, you know, your data is with, like, for example, Microsoft. Lots of our corporate information are with big companies like Microsoft or Google. These companies are introducing, Microsoft has a product they're going to be introducing called Copilot. And what you're really doing is it's using ChatGPT as this base language model. That's, again, it's like having the smartest person in the room with you. But then now it has access to your corporate data. And it's trying to do it, again, very securely, having access to your corporate data. And all of a sudden, maybe I have a response for proposal, an RFP. And now I can say, please help me fill out this proposal request using my corporate information. And so ChatGPT is like the best proposal writer in the world. It looks at all my corporate information and all my past proposals, and now helps to actually write that particular proposal. And maybe it'll only get like 80%, but you know what? It'll do it in a few minutes. And what would have taken me maybe days or weeks to put together, it just put it together for me in 5 minutes. Yeah. Can you see the advantage now? If I have that capability and you don't, right? You're going to spend the next week or 2 weeks working on the proposal, and I'm going to be done with it in 1 day.
Yeah, you'll definitely have the advantage. Plus, you'll have the extra time, right?
And have all the extra time to do more important things. Well, not more, but, you know, other things.
As we know, with any new technology, there's always an advantage, but there's also pitfalls that we have to watch out for.
Well, you know, depending, again, I think part of it is, you know, like how we talked about education, right? It's trying to understand what these different tools are. If you're looking up facts and things, using ChatGPT, like things that are generative, you know, they can get very creative. Right. So they can make things sound incredibly factual, but it's actually false. So if you're looking for certain kinds of information and you want it to be factual, using generative AI may not be the best idea, because it will create responses that sound very plausible, but could be very incorrect. Mm-hmm. So part of it is understanding these tools and understanding when should you use them. Of course, there's just, whenever you're talking about something so new like this, it's, of course, very easy to focus on all of the scary things. That's just natural, especially when you're dealing with something so new. But I think the things that are scary are all going to get fixed. But that's also the opportunity for entrepreneurs here in Hawaii. So for all the things you think are going to be scary and it's going to be an issue, know that those are also opportunities to create the next generation of companies here in Hawaii. And so that's what I'm really excited about, is for young people to get exposed to this technologies and be able to kind of create the next companies for Hawaii.
So what can a business do to be more prepared for competition that may be using it, or to integrate it into their own business?
Yeah, I think this is the challenge, because we have a certain way of doing business, right? And so we're already overwhelmed with what we have to do right now. I would say, again, I use it in very simple ways. Like, I'm trying to just brainstorm an idea, right? I can ChatGPT, they have versions now on Android and your iPhone, and you just ask it the questions, like, hey, help me brainstorm some new product names or some new service ideas, or give me some examples of some new business models that are being applied from one industry to another industry, to the industry I'm a part of, right? So like, use it like you have the smartest person in the room at your beck and call. And as you think of stuff and you're going, oh, I'm really stuck on this, just pull out ChatGPT, think about it. I mean, it's all those little things that eat up your day, right? But those little things over time, like in a single day, it's like, I just spent all this time, what did I get done? It just saves so much time.
Yeah, it saves you from all those little tasks.
Right.
That was technology expert Ian Kitajima talking with HPR's Russell Subiono about the use of artificial intelligence in business. Kitajima helped launch an experimental program earlier this year teaching design thinking and AI to about 80 public school students, ranging in age from elementary to high school. The student teams presented the results of the educational challenge last month to a panel of judges that included Superintendent Keith Hayashi. Some of the ideas included using chatbots to help improve financial literacy and to simplify the scholarship application process. Education officials are now pushing to pilot the ideas created by the students.
On the next Science Friday, Davis O'Bell's new book sees Marie Curie through the eyes of the women she mentored.
She was really a beacon. She was the only woman in the world with that kind of position. Head of a laboratory, professor on a science faculty.
Davis O'Bell on the next Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for HPR comes from Ruby Tuesday Hawaii, with locations in Moanalua and Kaneohe, offering dine-in and take-out daily and catering available for business meetings and events. RubyTuesdayHawaii.com.
One of the popular segments we feature on The Conversation is the Manu Minute. It was also the brainchild of one of our listeners, biology professor Patrick Hart. He reached out to us 3 years ago. We wanted to share more about the work that Hart does in his lab at the University of Hawaii at Hilo campus. He tells us that for the last decade or more, he's been trying to better track the trends of forest bird abundance. This is, after all, the year of the forest bird. Hart talked to us recently about getting his feet wet using artificial intelligence to do just that.
Right now, our birds are mostly declining, unfortunately. It's a big issue on Kauai right now, where the mosquitoes are moving up in elevation, and it looks like two birds are going functionally extinct on Kauai, the Akikiki and the Akeke, just in the last couple of years. And one of the things that we need to do to be able to manage our forest birds is to know, have better information on where they are and how many of them there are, how they're doing more often than we get right now. So what are their trends in abundance annually and seasonally? And so been really hard to get that with our traditional techniques where we just send people out in the forest and count them. It takes really specialized knowledge to be able to do that. But we've been working on ways to use sound, like bird song, like we play on Manu Minute every week. But there's ways to use just to record the soundscape nowadays, where you put these recorders out in the forest and program them to record for months at a time. And we collect the sound cards and upload them to the computer. And then we've been developing ways to teach the computer using AI, like a lot of other scientific fields these days, but we're using AI to automatically detect the song of every bird that sings in all of these hours and months of recordings. And then we've been working with a lot of collaborators to take what the computer's saying each species and then to use that to estimate how the birds are doing, like their trends. Are they increasing or decreasing over time? So it's kind of an automated way to monitor our forest birds to improve the way we can manage them as they continue to decline around the state.
That's a great idea. If we can synthesize the data that we're collecting out in the field to be able to know if the population is declining more rapidly than we fear.
I agree. And so we're just super excited because Hawaii's got such a big conservation crisis with birds. We're, you know, one of the first places in the world. We're kind of leading the charge on these new technologies because it's so important to improve the way we can monitor their distribution and abundance. So that's been really fun to be part of this project. We're working with Google, a friend of ours named Tom Denton. He's at the Google DeepMind wing of Google, and he's been helping with the AI side of things, and other folks in our lab, Amanda Naveen, and folks from USGS like Rick Camp. It's been a great collaboration, but we're super excited to apply this for anybody that has land in the state of Hawaii that wants to have better information about how their birds are doing. All you got to do is put out a sound recorder and let it record for a while, and then we can analyze the data, and we can tell you what species are on your land and if they're increasing or decreasing over time if you leave the recorders out long enough.
And so have you started doing that?
Yeah, we're actually doing it right now all over like Hakalau Forest National Wildlife Refuge here on the Big Island. We're working with folks on Maui, like with the National Park at Haleakala, and on Kauai in the Alakai with the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Program, with State DLNR, DOFA, Nature Conservancy, all these different groups that manage land and want to know better information about how their birds are doing and what birds they have there, too.
So how long have you been out in the field?
Oh, boy. Well, we've never stopped being out in the field, but we've had recorders out in the field. I've had recorders at Hakalau that have been recording for about 10 years straight now.
No kidding.
So we can take all those recordings that we've been storing away on the cloud, and we can run them through these, what we call them, classifiers. And there's a few steps in the methods, but we can look at how, you know, the trends in every species of bird that lives in the forest there, how, you know, on a daily basis or a seasonal basis, based on the number of songs that the AI identifies for each species.
Well, that's pretty exciting, but it's going to be a lot of data and synthesizing of all that and then extracting what we need to know. So be careful what you wish for.
A lot of data. Yeah. Every 5-minute recording is 10 megabytes of data. And then if you record for months and months, you can just do the math. It gets to be a lot of terabytes.
Well, so are these special recorders that you like stick up in the trees?
Yeah, there's a few different kinds. The ones we use are made by a company in Massachusetts called Songmeter. And the ones we use are called Songmeter Micros, and they can fit in the palm of your hand, and they're pretty lightweight. You could fit about 30 or 40 of them in a backpack. And, you know, the idea is to just put these tiny little things about, I don't know, waist high or head high in a tree, and they're waterproof, and you can program to record on any schedule. And so you could put out lots of them across the landscape, and so really look at kind of like large-scale patterns of how the birds are changing in abundance. And we've actually found birds, you know, rare birds in places where we didn't think that they were using these, because when people go out there, they're just listening for, you know, a few minutes at a time in each spot. But you put these recorders out there and they can record all day long. And so it could pick up all the rare species. And so we're excited about expanding what we know about the distribution of a lot of our rare birds, too, using technologies.
Yeah, but it's a great way to be able to track what we've got out there.
It works for not just birds, but any animal that makes sound, you know, koki frogs. We might be starting a collaboration soon with folks on Oahu to track koki frog outbreaks using recorders. It can work for crickets and any animal that makes sound, bats. Even fish actually make a lot of sound in coral reefs, even streams possibly. We're excited about it. I feel like it's going to really help improve, yeah, the way we can monitor forest birds in Hawaii moving forward. And it's not too expensive, you know. It's fairly inexpensive technology, the recorders, and then there's some costs with analysis, of course, and all that, but worth it in the long run, I think.
And then do you have to get a grant to help fund this, or is that part of, I know we got a whole bunch of federal money to help with our, you know, bird extinction.
This has all been supported by different grants, the Pacific Island Climate Science Adaptation Center, PICASC has been a big supporter, the National Park Service has been helping us. So yeah, everything that we do is pretty much grant supported. So we go one year to the next. We're just starting to expand recordings on Kauai for the forest birds there. We're starting in Palila. So Palila is one of the rare Hawaiian honeycreepers on the Big Island. We're working with the state DOFA to put out a big network of recorders so we can get better information on where the Palila are across the landscape, because Mauna Kea is a big place. So we can hopefully figure out where they are and get a better idea of how many there are left by putting out this big network of recorders on Mauna Kea.
And then do you need to get permission from the landowners, you know, if it's KS or the state, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we usually work in close collaboration with the landowners.
That was Patrick Hart of the UH Hilo Biology Department talking to us about using AI in his research with birds. Hart says his team is also branching out across the Pacific and will be doing work in Ponape, Palau, and Guam. As machine learning and the role of AI starts to blend into our daily lives, parents are wondering how their children can safely navigate the internet and other emerging technology that uses it. Darius Monsef is a longtime tech entrepreneur who grew up on the Big Island. He's a father and a Make-A-Wish Hawaii board member. Many of his recent startups have been focused on child safety. His newest project is the Genie AI app. It was created to give children a safe experience on the internet through the use of AI as a sidekick or a guardian. The conversations Russell Subiona got the chance to talk to Monsef about the app.
What prompted you to want to create Genie to address this particular issue?
Yeah, I guess there's two things. One, in the startup world, there's a common phrase about solving your own problems. Ideally, we like intimately connected to a problem and really want to solve it, which is what spurs us to want to create companies. And the other was, in the history of my work, and I've been on the board of Make-A-Wish Hawaii for a few years because I care deeply about kids and giving them every opportunity to succeed. And my previous startup was about children's healthcare. Coming out of that was really solidifying for me. I want to build for kids and for parents and solving my own problems. My middle kid is competitive with video games, and it means she skill matches with often people much older than her and often men. And that could and should be fine. And it's nice for her to have a voice comm on to talk to a teammate and organize play. But I can't trust her talking with her voice to some guy somewhere on the internet. So Genie came from this place of, man, this AI is going to unlock an ability. I can't live in my kids' conversations, every single one they have on the internet. I can't protect my kid everywhere they go on the internet. But there's a way for us to build an AI that can kind of be that good angel on the shoulder or the guardian that goes with them and looks for these things and gives them the like, something's up here. Maybe you shouldn't do that. Or here's something that here's a different way that you should approach this.
So you created Genie. It's an app that kids can use. What can they do on Genie? How can they use it?
Yeah, I think the first thing before I get to the features is that I think it's appropriate for parents to have a healthy skepticism of, I mean, everybody should. And the internet, in that it provides access to so much more information. It also provides much more access to misinformation. And I've seen it with some parents. There's kind of a distrust to tech bros or tech companies that are there just to prey on people's weaknesses, to get them addicted to games and to prey on their money. That does exist. And so we get some of it. And I don't react with a negative, like, hey, why are you looking at us this way? It's, well, the broader industry behaves badly. That's exactly why we're trying to build Genie, is if we don't leverage this technology in the best way possible for kids, other people are going to use it in ways that just prey on their vulnerabilities. So it was something that we really cared about to build. And so right now, Genie is an AI sidekick for kids. We're clear to call it a sidekick and not a friend, because a friend should hold equal space in a relationship. And Genie's sole purpose is to be the sidekick, to set the kid up to be successful, be the hero of that story. So it's conversational. They can chat with it. They can play word games, make up stories collaboratively. They can create generative art. And it provides access to the entirety of information that's online, but always in an age-appropriate way. Because the internet's kind of binary. You either give your kids Safari or a web browser and they have access to everything or nothing. And for a young, curious mind that really wants to learn, they can ask Genie, hey, where did the metric system come from? And instead of a Google search and clicking through websites and whatever ads and stuff would be there, they just ask Genie and Genie gives them the information. And that it is always age appropriate. So if you ask the sensitive subject question, Genie would answer it appropriately for a kid's age, and often just default to, hey, that's kind of a sensitive thing, and you should probably talk to a trusted adult like your parent about that. So it's not trying to replace the role of a parent. It's not trying to replace the importance of human interaction. It's meant to be like, if we imagine kids do get screen time, what could a healthy alternative be to that screen time that isn't just purely passive? It's creative, it's engaged, and underneath the hood is a bit of learning and experiencing.
One other thing that I read on your website is that you built Genie to be a supportive, kind, and encouraging companion for children that helps them when they're feeling alone, sad, or helpless. And you talked a little bit about how Genie is a sidekick. How does Genie help a child when they have these vulnerable kinds of feelings, feelings that parents should also be aware of? How does that dynamic work?
We had a good example of that recently. We spot check messages. Obviously, we're trying to audit to make sure that all these things we promise to people are true in the way Genie communicates with kids. And there was a kid that came in and basically just said, I'm really in a bad mood. I'm really sad. I'm mad. And that she had a disagreement with her mom and left that telling Genie, I think my mom wants a different kid. You know, this kid is really sad and feels like there's no place. And Genie said, you know, that's a difficult thing to feel, but it's okay that you talk to your mom about it. You could say, hey, when you do or say this, it makes me really sad. Can we talk about it? And the kid said, I'm not ready to talk about that yet, but let's make up a story with, I think, farting. And Genie's like, oh, okay. And they just played and they made this story up. At the end of this little play session, the girl said, okay, I'm going to go talk to my parents now. And so for me as a parent, like, that's exactly what I want. Like, we have issues of my emotions are up, kids' emotions are up, some conflict. To know that my kid is going to turn to something that can chat with, that's just going to be patient. And, you know, if they've maybe gone to one of their friend might have just said, yeah, parents suck. And like, that's fine. That's part of life. But to have Genie be a reflection and a place to like, hey, let's calm down and then go have this constructive conversation with the parent. That's what I want as a parent. And really, we're building it for ourselves.
I think one thing a parent might wonder about Genie is security. How is it secure when a child is using it on the internet? Has it been accredited, or are there overseeing organizations that put their seal of approval on it? What kind of oversight or security is there for the Genie app?
Yeah, so we started specifically building for kids and focusing on kids under 12 because they have, from the government mandated, a different set of compliance that if you're building for kids under 12, you have to build privacy and security that you don't have to. Unfortunately, you know, the joke is sort of like two kids in a trench coat. Facebook just says, hey, are you over 12? And the kid goes, yep. So for sites that build for specifically kids under 12, COPPA is the Child Online Privacy and Protection Act. Those are the legal requirements around if a kid is going to share personal information about themselves with others, you have to get a parent's consent. And parental consent is like scanning the government ID. It's kind of a cumbersome and heavy process. But there are compliance and regulations around COPPA for building for kids under 12. We work with a company called KidSafe that does kind of the auditing of us, and we're working towards our compliance. We obviously just started as a startup, so it takes time to work towards that. But we do things like we ask for a kid's first and last name, but the last name doesn't go anywhere to us and it doesn't leave the kid's device. It's stored on the device specifically to block the kid from future sharing it, because first name is something the kid can share and can put online because it's hard to narrow that kid down. But when tied to a last name, it becomes this indicator of who they are. And so we do things like that to prevent unintentional sharing where, yeah, we want to teach a kid how to be on the internet, but we're also trying to prevent unintended ways in which kids share things that they shouldn't.
Maybe if you can share with parents how they can get Genie and how it optimizes their experience, their children's experience with it.
We are parents specifically building, my kids all use Genie, so I'm in it right along with everybody else. And we're doing it because we really want to give every kid the opportunity to reach their full potential. Technology just continues to move fast. It becomes more and more accessible. Now kids are getting cell phones. They're even more connected in even more isolated ways. So we embrace the idea of AI being an assistant for us to help protect kids. It's like leverage that power for good rather than to just leave it into the hands of those that would prey on the vulnerabilities of people. So there really is an opportunity to create something that is always accessible for a kid, that is patient, is kind. It acts like that inspiring coach or teacher. It's an empathetic friend who never is having their own bad mood that might put that other kid in a bad mood. They're just always there in a positive and empathetic way to just encourage that kid to go live more, experience more. The goal of Genie is not to get a kid to not be outside, to not touch grass, to not have real life friends. For our company, our highest priority is helping the kid be successful holistically. That means the kid can't spend all day on Genie. They need to go outside. They need to play. They need to physically move. And so we're aligned in building a company that creates the best opportunities for kids. And our app is in the App Store, the Apple App Store right now. You can find it searching for genie.gg, or you can find it on our website, which is genie.gg as well.
Darius Montsev, thanks so much for your time this morning.
I appreciate you.
That was Genie AI app co-creator Darius Montsev talking with HBR's Russell Subiano. We'll have a link to more information about the Genie app on the conversation page of our website later today. That is it for this Aloha Friday Ohana Ho show. We were showcasing stories about artificial intelligence. Call our talkback line and leave us your comments. That number, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can find The Conversation as a podcast on Spotify, Apple, or on our website. Our program is produced by Russell Subiano, Lillian Song, and Maddie Bender. Support from Savannah Harriman-Pote and Tori DeJournay. The Backyard Quiz theme was written for us by John DeMello. Our theme music, courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up The Conversation.